This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM in McLean County, 92.5 FM in good old Bloomington Normal, 88.3 up in Pontiac, Illinois, and Livingston County, and 97.1 in Lincoln. And we are broadcasting to a 110-mile strip on the old double nickel, all the way from south of Lincoln, all the way up to Dwight, Illinois. And if you'd like to get your name out there, if you're a sponsor of our show, we can do that for you. The best thing to do is call us at 807-2427. That's area code 309. And you can also go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. And that will tell you all about us. It will tell you how to make a donation. It will tell you how you can get your name out on the air as well. So we depend on you. We're brought to you by you. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, and we're going to have a guest with us today. And we're going to do something a little bit different. We were talking about literature, and we will continue with that next week. But this week, we have a guest with us, and it's Sister Rachel Lauritsen, and she is going to tell us a little bit about herself and her Salesian order. She belongs to the Salesian order. And I think it's going to be a great show and a lot of fun with her today. She's a very young lady, and I think just getting into the order. And it's going to be fun talking with her and finding out a little bit about who she is, how she grew up, what made her go into the order that she's in, and what caused her to have the vocation that she has. So we're going to go ahead and let Sister take it from there and tell us a little bit about who she is, where she's from, and we'll go from there. So, Sister, if you'd like to introduce yourself and talk a little bit about yourself and your background, I'm sure the people out there are really going to be happy to hear you.
All right. So, like Bob said, I'm Sister Rachel Lauritsen. I grew up in Pontiac, Illinois, and I attended St. Mary's Grade School and Pontiac High School. And I went to University of Illinois in Champaign for a year, and while I was there, I met the Salesian Sisters of St. John Bosco. They were ministering at the Catholic Newman Center on campus. And in meeting the sisters and witnessing their joy and their enthusiasm and just their very much being with the students and going to whatever activities, joining us for late night games or going on retreat with us, their witness just really impressed me. And at the same time, God had kind of been working in my heart, and with the help of some friends who encouraged me to really become more active in my faith beyond what I had already been involved in through the youth group at St. Mary's, that it really left that space for God to come and work and speak to me and call me into the religious life. And that witness of the Salesian Sisters, I really felt drawn to. And so after my freshman year at U of I went and visited them in New Jersey, which is where our base is in the eastern half of the United States, and just really was filled with a peace and very
joy.
And at home there. So I ended up applying and entering that fall. And so they had 4 years of formation, and my two companions and I just professed our first vows on August 5th.
Okay, Sister, you talk about the Salesian Order, and can you tell us a little bit about the name Salesian Order? I mean, what is that named after, and why, and you know what its objectives are?
Sure. So the Salesians are named after St. Francis de Sales. So our founder, St. John Bosco, was working with young people in Italy in the mid to late 1800s and was very impressed and wanted to imitate St. Francis de Sales' humility and patience, and so named the order after St. Francis de Sales. And the sisters were founded shortly after the priest and brothers with the help of St. Mary Mazzarello. And our official name is actually the Daughters of Mary, Help of Christians, but because the priests and the brothers were more commonly known as the Salesians of St. John Bosco.
And I know, you know, that St. Francis de Sales was a great preacher. And he lived back, what, in the late 1500s into the 1600s, right in that area sometime, I think it was. Yeah, I believe it was after the Protestant Reformation.
Yes.
And he was sent into an area of France, I believe, and preached there to the people who had become Calvinists and tried to preach and teach and bring them back into the Catholic Church. And I know also that St. John Bosco was a great teacher and a worker with youth, taught as well as, of course, tried to help youth, especially troubled youth, youth that were often sometimes in reformatories or what, you know, along those lines, and bring them back into the church and into society again. So there's an emphasis there on sort of a teaching order. Is that emphasis still there in the Salesian order?
Yes, we're very much for the education of young people and working with young people in whatever capacity, particularly the youth who are less fortunate. In the United States right now, we're mostly in schools, elementary and high schools as well.
We need so much of that today. I might mention, I can bring this up, but before I do, I'll defer over to my wife, Lynn.
No, I was like, coming to that question, too, if you want to go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Well, it seems to me that we are in need today of catechesis. A lot of Catholics are in great need of catechesis, and I mean sort of deep catechesis, a sort of like not only what Catholicism is, but why it is, and the ability to defend it. And I was wondering if there would be room for that in something like the Salesian order, where that could be some kind of a special emphasis, apostolate, or whatever you want to, you know, call it, that some people in the order could dedicate themselves to. And that would be not only teaching, you know, strong Catholicism, all of the what's of the faith, but why the faith is that way, and also the ability to defend the faith. Would that be something you think might be of interest?
I certainly think in our theology classes with our students in high school, and even with the middle school students, and the young kids too, because they can learn how to defend the faith, that we make that strong emphasis to try to teach them the truths of the faith. And St. John Bosco was very... He believed that we meet the young people where they are, and then we help them to go deeper. So we take that everyday life, and we help them to apply the truths of the faith and to be able to defend the faith, because they're going to get thrown out into the world, and they're going to have to be able to stand firm in their faith. So I think that's definitely something that we work on emphasizing when we're teaching the young people, is to give them a very strong, true faith and not water down the truths of the faith at all. And also in reaching out to the young people, we try to incorporate the family as well, because it has to be a family affair. Like, the faith is not just for the kids, it's part of the whole family. So definitely in working with the children, we encourage the parents as well in teaching those solid truths of the faith and helping them to learn how to defend their faith so that they can stay strong.
Do you, the sisters, are they involved in catechesis, like for instance at the U of I?
Yes. So in most places we're associated with a parish as well, or we're nearby several parishes, and we're involved in the religious ed programs. And in several parishes, we also are the directors of religious education. So we definitely are big fans of the catechesis and helping the young people who maybe don't have the opportunity to go to a Catholic school.
Bob and I were, we taught the RCIA program at Epiphany for about 8, 9, maybe 10 years. And you learn so much doing it.
You learn so much teaching. To be a teacher, you learn so much.
It's true.
A lot of times, you know, I was one step ahead of the students, sitting here reading at the night before and making sure that I had everything down pat and right and so forth. And we really enjoyed it. We had our class, and we allowed anyone to come, Catholic, you know, they could already be in the church, Catholic and so forth, brushing up on their, you know, catechesis. And so we got a lot of the students who were Catholic involved in teaching. You know, we tell them, hey, you got to get up here and do something too. So some of them came back year after year just because they enjoyed doing it. And so we had a lot of fun doing that. So it's a great opportunity for you and for your sisters to meet, you know, like you say, not only the young people, but their parents, families, and so forth as well. We have to be in this together, like you say, I think is what we have to do. And I'm glad, you know, this is a teaching order. But getting back to talking about family, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what you were like when you were a kid and growing up in Pontiac and what your family was like and what maybe some personal things that sort of influenced you?
Sure. So I am the oldest of eight kids. There's five girls, three boys in my family. My younger sister was actually born after, my youngest sister was born after I entered. So there's a pretty big age gap in there. But growing up, you know, we've spent time, quality time as family, playing games, hanging out at home. And not just my immediate family, but the extended family too, aunts, uncles, and cousins. We would spend time together. And I think that emphasis of the importance of family was instilled from a young age because it was family comes first. You know, the other activities are great. You can be involved in sports and you should try new things, but always remember, you know, the importance of family. So I think that was impressed upon me at a very young age. And
so you went to Catholic school, St. Mary's?
I did, kindergarten through eighth grade. And I think that also really built upon the foundation of my faith, that witness of the teachers and my classmates and having the opportunity to go to church every Friday with my classmates and praying the rosary as a class and the opportunities throughout the year to go to reconciliation. So that definitely gave me a firm foundation going into public high school, and then the opportunity to be a part of the youth group in 7th and 8th grade, and then the high school youth group.
Which do you think influenced you most, or is it a combination of all that helped point you towards the going into a religious life?
I think it was a combination of all, because in some way, shape, or form, everything plays a part in who we become. And it forms us in some way, shape, or form. I think the witness of the other young people in the youth group and their involvement in their faith definitely encouraged me a lot, because I was kind of shy to be very outspoken about my faith or to really share much with other kids who weren't necessarily Catholic. And there was one young woman who was teaching at St. Mary's and was helping with the youth group, and she entered a religious order. And I think that really impressed me a lot, because at that point, I think God was already trying to kind of speak to me, but I was very much against it and was kind of like, no, not for me.
I think that's typical.
Yes.
Not me.
Yeah. But her witness was like, okay, so normal people enter religious life, and it's okay. So I think her witness was definitely had a strong impact.
That's good. And your order wears the habit?
Yes, we do.
And did that have any influence on which order you chose?
You know, initially, I don't think it really did, but the further I got into formation, I was very grateful to have that witness of the habit, because it says, like, I have given my life to something specific, and it also allows people to see, like, okay, these are sisters, and to see that witness and feel more comfortable to come up and speak to us if they want to.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree so much. I think the habits, you know, should come back. Lynn went to Catholic school. I didn't, and I was taught by the nuns, the sisters, I should say, they worked at St. Margaret's Hospital. They were, you know, a nursing and a group and so forth, some of them teachers as well, and we got a good, you know, catechesis from them, and of course they wore, you know, habits, and then it seemed like back, you know, during the late 60s or 70s.
Vatican II.
Yeah. you know, it fell out. More and more people were without habits. I think it's great. I think that, you know, it shows, like you say, who you are. And it's a sign, and people can see it, and it stands out, especially in this day and age. And speaking of this day and age, I was just going to ask you, what kind of, detracting factors do you think exist for young people in our society from, maybe going into a religious vocation, like in high school or whatever? Are there any, was there any, when you started indicating that you wanted to maybe have a religious vocation, probably from what you tell me, your family was probably supportive, but is there any social factors you think in our more modern society that sort of militates against it?
I think there definitely are, because there's such a push for success, and people often, because our world has become very materialistic, the measurement of success is by your college degree or how much you're earning or what you drive or where you live. And I think people can be deterred by that, because it's religious life, it's not about success. It was beautiful at our Jubilee celebration this year. The bishop who gave the homily was talking about, we're celebrating not success, but surrender. And that's what religious life, there's a lot that we're surrendering to the Lord what we have and who we are. And so I think that can be a deterrent for young people sometimes, because they have to be able to see the beauty in that surrender too, because they're so surrounded by this emphasis on materialism. And if you aren't rooted and grounded and don't have those people in your life who help you to see that it's not all about that, that it can be very difficult for them to leave that behind. And I think my parents, my family helped me to see that in valuing things, not just things, but people and who you are and who your values are. And I think when young people, like you said, my family really was not, they were very supportive of me and have been of my vocational journey. But I know other people who it can become very difficult for them, because their parents want them to be the successful doctor or lawyer or whatever. And so they have to help their family see, but this is something beautiful too. This is a lifestyle that is beautiful because I can help and serve other people.
And I think that's what we have to remember, that, we're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful.
Yes.
And I think that's probably, we need to recapture that understanding in our society. I think it would make for a better society, not just for people in vocations, but for everyone across the board as well.
Absolutely.
And with that, we're going to have to take a break here. We're with Sister Rachel Lauritsen of the Salesian Order. She's talking about her vocation and how she got into it. We'll be talking more about these interesting things when we come back, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Catholic Radio, changing hearts and minds.
I've been listening to Catholic Radio for about a year now. I am a Protestant. I have learned so much. I voted for life in this election because I was listening to Catholic Radio.
We depend on your support to keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air 24 hours a day, broadcasting the truth and beauty of the Catholic Church.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break, and we're talking with Sister Rachel Lauritsen of the Salesian Order. She's from Pontiac. She's telling us a little bit about herself and her background, and she's going to talk a little bit more about what it is to enter a vocation, and maybe if people out there would like to get information, not only on her order, but just the idea of maybe entering a vocation. She's going to talk a little bit about that. I do want to talk about the progression that she is going through. She entered a religious order, and you do take vows. Could you tell us a little bit about what vows are and where you're at in that process, Sister?
Sure. So I just took my first vows, and typical is the vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. And in some cases, like the Jesuits, for example, have a fourth vow of obedience to the Pope. For the Salesians, we just have those three vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. And that idea of surrendering my ability to choose, my power to my possession, and of love, that we're surrendering that to the Lord and giving all that over to Him. And the progression, it was 4 years of formation before first vows, and I had a year of aspirancy, and 10 months as a postulant, and 2 years of novitiate. And then those years, you study what it is to be Catholic, to know the faith, and then in those last 2 years of the novitiate, you study the constitutions of the Salesian sisters, and you really learn what it is to live the faith, to live as a consecrated religious woman, as a Salesian. And then comes first vows. And then after that, in temporary vows right now, so I renew those each year for 4 years. And in the fourth year, it's for 2 years. And at the end of those 2 years is perpetual vows.
Okay, so in other words, a person sort of has an opportunity to go in stages and to make sure that they're doing, you know, what they want to do. I mean, that this is really their calling and that it's not a mistake.
Absolutely, yes. So those, especially those first 4 years in that initial stage of aspirancy, is still very much a time of discernment and prayer and reflection and listening to the Lord to figure out, is this where God is calling me to serve Him?
So when you take a vow, you're sort of making a promise to God.
Yes.
And that is a reminder also, I think, that the difference between, you know, Catholicism and some of our other religions in the modern world is that Catholicism is a sacramental religion. In other words, it's not a contractual association. It's you take a vow, you give yourself. In other words, you're sort of giving yourself to God or giving yourself to the Lord. You know, you promise yourself. And God, in return, you know, makes a reciprocal promise with you.
Right. And something that sometimes people might ask, like, well, if priests, there's a sacrament specifically for priests for ordination, but sisters don't have a sacrament, and that's because our vows are a deepening of our baptismal promises. So it's giving ourselves to the Lord and living our baptism more radically.
I can understand. I don't mean necessarily, you know, that yours is, you know, a sacrament in itself, but the whole concept of Catholicism a little bit more than our society. Our society is contractual.
Yes.
And we're even looking at marriage nowadays as a contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe some of that stems all the way back to the Reformation from Martin Luther with this idea of, you know, a contractual arrangement where Christ had stepped in, you know, and agrees legally in sort of a legal contract. And Catholicism does not look at things from that point of view at all. It's entirely different. And I think much more beautiful, really, with the sacramental idea of, you know, a promise and a giving of, you know, in marriage, for example, you know, it's like I give myself to my wife and she gives herself to me. And it's not a contract that we write out and can be broken legally. I mean, it's binding forever because we give a final vow.
Right.
And
absolutely.
And yours is the same way. It's sort of like a marriage ceremony more than
the
vow that you're taking.
Very much so.
And then so is a priest also, you know, in that way. And there's a reason why, you know, there are priests are males and, you know, there are other, you know, the Catholic Church was probably more appealing in its early years to women than anyone else because it provided a role for women and the treatment of women under Catholicism, if you look back in early Christianity, was probably far, you know, more fair and beautiful and kind and good than it ever was, you know, prior to that. So, you know, you still have a lot of those things are still there if we want to find out about them and explore them a little bit is what, you know, I'm sort of trying to drive at.
Yes.
Do you, in your order, are you getting many people inquiring?
Yes, and we're very fortunate. We have a good number of young women in temporary vows, and so there's 15 of us in temporary vows in the in the eastern half of the United States, and there's five novices and 5 who are going to be postulants, and we'll have new aspirants coming in soon. So definitely very hopeful. We're very
blessed. That's fantastic. That really is.
Can you comment on that postulate and novitiate? I mean, what does that mean, and what's the difference between a postulate and a novitiate?
Sure. So the first stage, the aspirant, is that first initial stage, which is very much still the discernment and just initially coming and living in the community, learning what religious life is about. The postulant phase is a little bit deeper. You learn a little bit more about the institute, about the order. You're a little bit more actively involved in ministry. And then the time of the novitiate is very much a time of reflection, prayer, learning the constitutions, more actively living the life of a Salesian sister. And the novitiate, you're called sister, and so you're a novice in the sense that you are a part of the institute, but you're still very much learning, and you've asked to learn about the constitutions, study the constitutions, and then at the first vows, you are then making the promises to live those.
Okay, you're talking about the ministry. I mean, I know, you know, some of you teach and teach in probably, you know, Catholic schools and that kind of thing. What else? You say the life of a Salesian sister. What else? Is it all teaching? Is there anything else that the Salesians do?
Well, the novitiate house where I was just most recently at, we have a retreat center. So we run we host weekend-long retreats that youths, parishes come and stay there. We also travel and give sacramental retreats to students preparing for First Communion, First Reconciliation, and Confirmation. In the summertime, we have several summer camps around that we're with the young people. And we're also active in some youth ministry in the United States, and very much so in Canada, where our sisters are at.
I see.
So it's primarily teaching.
Yes.
Okay, let me ask a little bit about this. You know, we're affiliated with EWTN, you know, Eternal Word Television Network. Mm-hmm. It's very traditional in its outlook. Is, you know, how does that fit in with the Salesians? Is you know, are they very traditionally Catholic along that line?
Very much. I mean, Don Bosco was very faithful to the Pope and believed that we have to be faithful to the Pope and follow his teachings and where he's guiding the church, because that is the vicar of Christ here on earth, and that will lead us to live out our holiness, to be able to live our everyday holiness, and to keep ourselves rooted between with our following the Pope and keep ourselves rooted between the Eucharist and the Blessed Mother.
Okay, is there ever any tension between, like, the UCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and some of the religious orders? I know sometimes there's, it seems sometimes there's some tensions, or you have to have the permission, you know, to be in a certain area of the bishop, do you not, and so forth?
Well, certainly the bishop has to request the religious to be there, and then we respond and certainly try to fulfill that ministry if that's within our charism and what we would work with. I definitely think it's a working together, because the church is one big happy family. But, you know, just like every other family, you know, we have those things we have to work through.
Absolutely. When you say one big happy family, yes, and at the same time, you know, what do they say about somebody that's in business with their family? It's sort of like, the great thing about my business is, you know, being in business with my family, and the worst thing about my business is being in business with my family.
Certainly. You know, it's a way to grow. We all help each other on our path to holiness, and we have to learn how to grow with each other.
Right.
During your formation, what did you find most difficult? To me, it would be the obedience.
Certainly. I think initially the hardest thing for me was to be away from family and to be so far away, because that was certainly the longest and the furthest I'd ever been from my family. So that was definitely the challenge initially. And then I think it was sometimes just allowing that growth to take place in myself, because, you know, sometimes you don't want to face the things about yourself that you don't like, but when you're living that closely with other people, you're able to see that shadow side a little more closely, and you're like, okay, I have to work on these things because that's preventing me from being the best person I can be.
I imagine it would be hard to live in community.
It definitely has its challenging moments, but like Bob mentioned before, you know, like when you're working with your family, it's the best thing and the worst thing. So it's really beautiful too, because you become family, and it's a joyful place to be able to work and live and pray and play together.
Is there a process in learning how, I don't want to use the word break and breaking family ties, but is there a process that's sort of like, you know, learning how to separate yourself, you know, from family? I mean, is there a discipline that you're called to so that you will learn, you know, to stand on your own and to follow the discipline of the order when you enter the order? Is there some kind of rules about, you know, limiting the amount of contact and so forth with family so that you're learning, you know, to
make that break?
Yeah, to make that break.
So it's pretty typical. I mean, we're allowed to have email and Facebook or whatever, and I may email family throughout the week, but to really call family is pretty much reserved to the weekend time. So especially during that first year, it's kind of, you know, try to make phone calls on Saturday or Sunday. And then our visits to our family kind of gradually, the first year you're there for two visits and they're decent amounts of time. And then the second year, still two visits, but they're a little bit shorter. And then after that, you start going home once a year for about 10 days. So, you know, but the family spirit was very important to St. John Bosco, because he believed our parents were the first benefactors. And so it's important for us to keep those family ties, but at the same time respecting, you know, this is my lifestyle, and including them, but, you know, still, you know, when you become an adult, you have to move out of your parents' home eventually and live your own life, and similar in some ways.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing to do, though. Back before Vatican II, I went to visit a novice.
Okay.
And she had to ask permission to eat a piece of the candy that her mother, her aunt had made for her. Mm-hmm. And her letters, they read the letters, or, you know, I don't know if they really read them, but, you know, everything had to be, you had to learn that discipline. And I think it was harder than... I thought I could never do that.
Yes. I think there's other orders who have more separation from family, especially in formation, that they might only be able to write letters or make phone calls at certain times of year. And I think, to me, when I was initially discerning, that was something that really scared me, because with so many younger brothers and sisters, I'm like, I'm going to not get to...
away from it.
Yeah, I'm not going to get to see them grow up or have really a relationship with them at all. And so I think that family spirit of the Salesian order, to me, that was part of something that spoke to me, because my family was something that was so important to me growing up.
That's good. That's a good thing.
What are some of the clues maybe that young people might have, whether men or women, you know, as they're growing up, that they might have a calling or a vocation? What were some of the things that, were there anything early in your life, or was it just later in your life, or was there, you know, anything that made you think from time to time that you might have a calling or a vocation?
I think initially, like, occasionally they would have a sister or a seminarian come and talk to us in grade school at St. Mary's, and every time somebody would come in, I'm like, that's not for me, that's for somebody else. I think in high school I did feel a little bit of an initial calling, but because I thought I had my life figured out and wasn't really leaving space to let God's plan come through, I did have that inkling, but because I shoved it aside, wasn't really open to it. So I think it was really that year at the University of Illinois that a lot took place, that God was able to really speak to me. And I think it's just that openness. Like, if young people allow God to, they give him some space to talk to them, and don't allow themselves to just shut him out completely, which can be a temptation, because it's not typical. It's very countercultural to enter religious life at this point in our history, and you're living a countercultural lifestyle. But if young people allow that openness, if they allow the Spirit to guide them. I think they end up where God is directing right. them to go.
No, I don't know if I got this clear or not. Did you finish then your education at U of I?
I did not. I only completed 1 year.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I only completed 1 year. What's the typical background of some of the people that, I mean, are most of the people that you were in, you know, as a postulate novitiate with, are they about of equal age, or is there some age differences or differences in background of education and so forth? Can you talk about that a little bit?
For our group, we had a very wide span and diverse group. I think it depends on the year, certainly, because the Salesians, you can enter from 18 to 35. So in our group, we had myself and one other young woman who discerned that this wasn't her lifestyle, who had each completed 1 year of college. And we had a few young women who had completed their bachelor's, studied for their master's, and had worked for several years. So my companions had backgrounds, training that was not education. So there's sisters who come from all sorts of different backgrounds and professional fields. It's not necessarily education, but they find that working with young people was really where they're called to be. So it comes from all walks of life. I had a companion who was journalism and urban planning, and another companion who was an economist. So we definitely come from all walks of life.
It's really interesting. It is. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to take a break.
Yeah,
here.
We're coming up here on a break, so we're going to take a break, and we'll come back in the next segment and finish up with Sister Rachel in just a little bit. And I'm using your first name there. Have you taken a? Do you take before we? Well, we'll get back to that names in the next segment. Okay. So we're going to take a break here. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Yeah. You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnson on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Catholic Radio, changing hearts and minds.
My Protestant church family, we are pro-life, but there's something more that I'm getting from Catholic Radio and the teaching and the discussion, and I have learned so much.
We depend on your support to keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air 24 hours a day, broadcasting the truth and beauty of the Catholic Church.
George Bernard Shaw once wrote that the battle of the sexes will never be won because there's too much fraternizing with the enemy. Have you noticed the trend to remove and renounce any distinctions between men and women in certain social and professional roles? So we have generic firefighters, we have actors when we once had actresses, flight attendants when we used to have stewardesses. I think standard English is already inclusive. In fact, calling females who act for a living actresses is more elegant and distinctive. It doesn't put them down, it sets them apart. But in today's new normal, you're not supposed to bring up the obvious natural and biological fact that men and women are different. Equal in dignity and worth, yes, but not interchangeable. Whatever happened to Vive la Différence? I have no idea. In the meantime, let's be saints. What else is there?
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM right here in Bloomington Normal in McLean County, and also in Lincoln and Pontiac. And we're with Sister Rachel Larson today, and we're going to talk a little bit maybe about names that people in these vocations take. And I'm going to let Sister talk a little bit more about herself and some things that she wants to talk about. And I think my wife also has some questions. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Lynn, and to you, Sister.
Okay. Sister, I was wondering, is there a rule or spirituality that you follow? For instance, the Franciscans, it's gospel to life and life to gospel. Is there something like that in your order?
So I think what would apply most to us would be our preventive system, and that's the way that we work with young people, but it really applies to life in general, and that's made up of reason, religion, and loving kindness. And that was how St. John Bosco really felt that you could reach the young people without using that disciplinary, like, people are like, oh, the sisters, like, you must have your rulers and, like, stick the kids in the corner. Like, no, that's really not how we work. That's not our way of living, just by that joyful way and that witness and reasoning with the young people and reaching out to them and that loving kindness and helping religion to become a part of their lives. And Don Bosco would say, love what they love, and they will love what you love.
Wow. And that's very true.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So going out there and being with the young people and having that presence. And I think we have to live that also very much so in our community, that when we're with our sisters, you know, we have to use that reason, religion, and loving kindness mm-hmm. rather than just flying off the handle when sister so-and-so leaves something in the middle of the community room or something. You know, right. You have to reach out to other other people and meet them where they are.
Mm-hmm. What type of spirituality, as far as daily prayer and stuff, do you follow in your order?
So we're active contemplatives in action, and we have our meditation, morning prayer, mass every day, and then we have short visits periodically throughout the day to the Eucharist as much as we possibly can, whether that's taking our class right after recess or if it's stopping in as we're picking up our lunch and then going out to the playground, that you just stop in and say a quick hello to Jesus, mm-hmm. that those little moments to reconnect. And then we pray the rosary because we definitely have a devotion to our Blessed Mother. And then in the evening, we gather together for spiritual reading and evening prayer. And then throughout the day, it's just keeping that presence, keeping yourself in the presence of God and remembering that He is present with us wherever we're going. And offering as we're going from one activity to the next, saying, okay, I'm offering this up to you.
Good. The other thing... What was it that you were thinking you were going to do when you went to college?
So I was planning on going into agriculture education. I had been super involved in FFA as a high school student and part of the ag in the classroom. And I got to go and teach and help teach ag curriculum to the younger kids in the grade schools. And I absolutely loved it. So I wanted to be able to develop those programs and help young people to connect with agriculture. So, you know, in a way that was leading me to work with the youth and seeing that God was pointing me in the direction of education, definitely.
Right. Well, actually, you haven't departed from that a whole lot other than surrendering yourself to God.
Yes.
Now, did you grow up on a farm, did you?
I did not. I grew up in town, but my grandparents... had farms, so I grew up going out to grandma and grandpa's and riding on the tractor at the combine.
Well, super. What were some of your FFA projects? Your 4-H projects, rather. I'm sorry.
Okay, for FFA, I was more involved in like the public speaking and communications. The Ag in the Classroom was a big project I worked on.
See, God was preparing you.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I was just curious if you ever, you know, raised any animals or anything for show or anything like that.
No, I never showed.
Okay, just along those lines. When you talk about communities, you talk about, you know, your communities. How big is your order? I mean, how many people, you know, how many sisters are in the entire order, say, in the United States and Canada? Is there a figure that you have or anything along those lines?
In the United States and Canada, I want to say we're about 230, 250, okay. around there. Worldwide, we're 12,000.
12,000, that's pretty good. And where are your biggest bodies of people? Are they, you know, do you know what countries those are? Or?
I know we have a very large presence in India at this point.
Okay.
They gone into Africa?
Or? We are in some African countries, and you know we have missionaries over there, and we're throughout Europe and South America. We have a lot of sisters too.
So what, like, you know, is there some means? I mean, do you have any idea, like, where you may be sent? Are you sent, or do you volunteer to go somewhere, or how does that work anyhow, sister?
Typically, for the most part, people will stay within their own native homeland. Unless they volunteer to be a missionary, because you know that's really a vocation within the vocation to be a missionary to in a foreign land. And we certainly have many sisters who are missionaries throughout the world, and occasionally there'll be that instance too where mother general will say, look, I really need you to go to this country. And so there are some cases where there are missionaries who didn't think they were going to be missionaries.
Right.
Is there, like, any language training that people get, or do you take languages, or do you have a language, or do some of the sisters have languages? Or?
Worldwide, we all learn Italian, because that would be our unifying language, because okay. St. John Bosco, St. Mary Mazzarella were Italian. And then if a missionary gets sent to a foreign country, they certainly have the missionary preparation, and then they might get sent to another country where they can learn that language. For example, some of our sisters who go to some of the African countries that speak English will come to the United States and study English for a year or two before they go.
I see.
Do you have any inkling about where they're going to place you? I mean, what your primary job will be?
Well, for right now, I know where I'm going for this year, and that's mm-hmm. pretty much, you know, what you're going yeah, and doing for right. a year. This year, I will be returning to college, so I'll be studying full-time and also helping part-time in the aftercare, helping in the aftercare of one of our elementary schools in New Jersey.
Okay, so when you return to college, where will you be going? Will you be going back to U of I? Or?
No, I'll be at a Union County College in New Jersey.
Okay.
Studying... working towards my associates for now, and then go on to finish my bachelor's eventually.
Well, will it be in education, you think?
Yes. So right now, looking at early childhood elementary education.
Is that what you hope to do when you're in the order to be with kids and teach?
Definitely. I mean, there are ways that God needs our talents and skills. He uses us in other ways, and, you know, if that be where I'm needed, that will be where I go, but certainly would love to be with the young people and be working with them.
Well, with a family of eight, you've got some pretty good experience.
Oh, most definitely.
And working with kids, yeah.
Even living in community, it has prepared you.
You may have learned a little bit of patience, probably.
Certainly did. You know, I think that my family, you know, being from a large family, it definitely helped with the transition into community life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's great. I think, you know, we need to have larger families come back. You know, the family is really, it seems to me, I don't know if you've noticed it or your order does or addresses this problem, it's sort of under attack, you know, in the modern world in the United States right now. Not only, you know, we have abortion, and then there's, you know, people, the idea, you know, that we have too many children, we should only have one child or two children and along those lines. And then there's so much divorce and that kind of thing. So there's a huge need, I would guess, along those areas of maybe starting with younger children and teaching them the importance of family, don't you think?
Absolutely, definitely. And that is an emphasis in our schools, to really emphasize the importance of the family and to support the parents, too, because it's not easy for them in today's day and age to keep the family together, because everybody's pulled in so many different directions that it can become a challenge. So I think part of our ministry, definitely in our schools, is to help support the families and help the parents to emphasize that strength of the family to their kids.
You are so right there. I think there probably needs to be more emphasis, maybe even other orders besides your own or within your own order of, you know, helping parents raise children. I mean, the support that they need, you know, and the direction maybe that could be given and those kinds of things. So many people are thrown into raising families anymore without a lot of knowledge and, you know, so much confusion.
No instruction book.
No.
I think it's very, you know, too, very important in this, especially in this day and age, when the family is falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read statistics where perhaps 75% of families single parent.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
It is. It's unfortunate.
Did you, you know, in discerning, you know, your vocation, did you look into any other orders besides the Salesians at all? And look around?
Not really. I found the Salesians kind of found me, and where I found them at U of I, and I just was attracted to their way of life, and one of the sisters who really accompanied me on my vocational discernment, she said, well, here's a magazine, the Vision magazine, that has the orders listed and is kind of a guide to help men and women who were discerning religious life. And I shoved it kind of behind a lot of other things on my desk because I didn't want my roommate to see it. And I didn't really look at it a whole lot because whatever it was, that God was really just pointing me in the direction of the Salesians. And after visiting them, spending time with the sisters at U of I, just really fit.
Other than the U of I, is there a Salesian presence anywhere else in Illinois?
No, actually, and we're no longer at the U of I either, so we currently do not have any presence in Illinois, which, you know, we got to pray that someday we can come back
for
out
sure,
this way.
For sure, all right. So how else can you work with these families?
Yes.
But I was, how does your order reach out, you know, to try and let people know who they are, where they are, and how they could become, you know, join the order if they have a vocation or at least look into it? Is there any means that they have? Or
yes, we have a website, SalesianSisters.org, I believe. And we're also present on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Young people, hop on the internet, Google, where you can find us on Google for sure. And the opportunities that young women can come and visit and learn more about us.
Okay, your roommate when you were at U of I, was your roommate Catholic? Or was it?
She was, and the two of us did not, it was not one of those roommate situations where we became best friends at the end.
That's why you didn't want her to see that.
Very much so.
But we're not supposed to hide our candles or whatever, or our coins under a bushel basket, are we?
No, we shouldn't. And then,
no, but
I'm just having fun with you, sister.
I can see where you would.
I'm just having fun with you.
That idea that you're going to devote your life, and it's so contrary to the world today.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at you, and I'm sure it would have spread, you know,
yes,
to other people. You knew, oh, she's considering.
You know, that's why I think the habit is so important. I mean, mm-hmm, it speaks to everyone, and you never know. Maybe in some of the probably places you would never, ever dream that somebody would be interested, you can get somebody to come up to ask you a question simply because of what you're wearing.
Yes, so. And I think, you know, you'd asked me earlier about young advice to young people, and, you know, you just said, like, that fear, and very much so, even to my own friends and family, I didn't want to say anything because there was this fear that, you know, I was going to do something so different and so not common that I was in fear of saying anything and was like very much like, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to say
anything.
Don't
spoil it.
So, you know, I definitely encourage young people, don't be afraid, you know. Find those people, those friends who, you know, you can trust and who are going to be those support systems you need, because once I overcame that fear, I found that I really had a wonderful support system.
Well, I'm glad you got that out because it's important. I think that's what I'm trying to sort of drive at. We have a society that seems to sort of have an animus toward or suppress, you know, the religious vocations and so forth in mm-hmm favor of, oh my goodness, you're throwing your life away. You could become a doctor or a lawyer, or you could, you know, there are so many things, mm-hmm, or you could go into agriculture, you know, these successful things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your habit is really important, I think. I think
right,
that habit should come back because they're a sign in our society that are not hidden under a bushel basket. People can see. And there are probably people that you wouldn't dream of that have something in their heart that they may come up and ask you simply because of what you look like.
That's very true. And, you know, thank goodness in the United States we still have that freedom to be able to wear our habits, because we are very much blessed here in the States, because not everywhere in the world is there that openness and acceptance of and respect, really, of religious life.
That's true. I guess we should be, you know, grateful and also understand that there are people in places that have to fight,
mm-hmm,
you know, in a way. I'm not saying necessarily, you know, with arms, but nevertheless, it's a battle in order to, you know, go about the way you're going about,
mm-hmm,
and that you can do without any, you know, real resistance, except, you know, this sort of, you know, resistance you get in our society. Oh my goodness, are you going to do something like that? You're so different, you know.
Yeah,
right. You're
going
to hide yourself at a convent.
Right. Yes.
Right. Yeah, and that's yeah. What do you want to say about things like that? If people think that the life of being, you know, joining an order, vocation, or a religious life is somehow hiding yourself from the world and retreating and you know, being apart. you are setting yourself apart in a way, but you're certainly not hiding from the world, are you?
No, most definitely not hiding from the world. I think, really, I mean, many young people, they want to make a statement with their life. And if you want to make a statement with your life, I mean, you have to do something that's different and out there. And religious life is part of that. Like, I mean, we're making a statement by who we are, and we're powerfully witnessing to what we believe in. And so it's not throwing your life away. You're really throwing your life to God, to something really beautiful and meaningful in a time where there's temptation to throw yourself to a lot of things that aren't going to leave you really to true fulfillment, just, you know, temporary fulfillment.
That is so true, and I'm really glad you got that in there. And people out there should remember they can go online, can't they, and find out all about your order and many others as well. Men as well as women, you know, there are religious vocations for men as other than the priesthood, and there are religious vocations for women other than the Salesians. And so there are many things out there for people to look at, and I'm sure you encourage people to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
Is there anything more that you'd like to say before we close?
I don't think so. Thank you so much for having me and this opportunity to talk and share about the Salesian Sisters and my journey.
Well, thank you so much for being on. I mean, this is Sister Rachel. She's a young sister, and she's exuberant looking. It seems like she's happy, and she's interested in what she's doing. And
she's got that bright peace and joy that the religious do have. You can see it.
Right. So we're going to have to close here, and we'll close. Lynn and I always close our show with our prayer, the prayer of St. Michael. So St. Michael, the Archangel,
defend us in battle.
Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly hosts, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander the world through the ruined souls. God bless everyone out there. We'll pray for you. Please pray for us. And I hope everyone looks into a vocation that may have an interest as Sister Rachel. Is your name going to stay the same, Sister Rachel?
Yes, we keep our baptismal name.
You keep your baptismal name. That's what I wanted to find out, the one thing I didn't. So, again, God bless everyone out there, and we've had a great time talking with Sister Rachel, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.